Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to discuss everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bleeger quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Sidgwick to discuss last night's episode of Monday Night Raw, and unfortunately, after several weeks of, well, really great program.
No, dear, that's wrong.
Pretty decent program.
No, dear, that's wrong.
A way to spend 3 hours.
Yay!
It all fell to pieces last night, didn't it, Sidge?
I'm going to become the fucking Joker. If this show doesn't improve, and it won't, so that's my future.
What was the term you used on Twitter? Insipid. That was great this
Insipid.
Morning.
Insipid. It's just...
Sidgwick Mega fans will be fine with me referencing your Twitter again, won't they?
Absolutely. They will forgive you. They will forgive you. I mean, I'm just... the worst thing about this show is, like, I have work dread in my dream job because this show is so bad. I've had an epiphany, and it's quite a strikingly bad one. I'm pretty certain I've run out of ways to bury it. I no longer have the appetite to bury it. There are no words left to bury it. There are no insights left. There are no jokes left. This show is just some content, like, casually produced, lazily produced. I don't know what else to say.
You often say that I'm probably the most optimistic out of the three of us normally when we talk about...
Even Hamflet, who's a big-time... He's a very loyal guy in general. This is a guy who will travel nationwide to see the Cribs. Like, he's a very loyal guy. I admire that greatly about him. He persisted with WWE. He's clever, very clever. He knows it's not great, but he still gets some personal enjoyment out of it because it's just his thing. Even he's like, this is all bad, all of it.
Yeah, I think that I'm genuinely quite positive a lot of the time about Raw. Like, I have enjoyed the last few weeks. And by that, talk about grading on a curve here. By that, I mean, I get to the end of watching Raw, on double speed, let's not forget that, in the early hours of Tuesday morning, and I go, there are worse ways to spend my time. That cannot apply to this episode. My anticipation and hope for Monday Night Raw, some might say, has been whittled away. We've got to give an apology to Brian Alvarez before we do anything here.
Indeed, we're in love with his bit. On his Fastlane 2017 review. Like, we're in love with... We're big fans of Alvarez.
Oh, we're huge fans.
He's amazing.
He got me back into wrestling, mate.
He gets a rep. And it's like, he's right more often than he's not, but the truth's...
I think I want to meet him more than I want to meet Meltzer. Genuinely.
I'd party with them both because I'm hardcore. But no, genuinely, like, I really like Alvarez. Got a great deal of time. I think he's incredibly entertaining. And even if you find his takes negative... or whatever, he's phenomenal at his job.
And he does this bit up on the review.
Whittled away.
We thought it was frittered away. But I think that's probably just from my impressions of Kevin Patrick. So apologies, Brian Alvarez. Basically, what we're doing here is trying to talk about anything other than Monday Night Raw. So anyway, the show started. Drew McIntyre came out and welcomed us too. I thought I was in a good mood at the start. He said it, and I was like, he said the thing. He came out. He said, had his sword with him. Of course, it was appropriate to be a Warrior kicking off Raw in the hometown of the Warriors. He ran through some of the matches that have got coming up at Crown Jewel, including him facing, of course, Big E for the WWE Championship. And he said, look, I know my time on Raw is counting down, but I want to go to SmackDown as champion. He's about to tell a story when Big E's music hit, and they reference the fact that Big E did those phenomenal intros for the Fury Wilder 3 fight. Big E comes down, he says, look, I understand why you want to regain this belt. I myself have felt the sweet nectar of the championship drip down my chin betwixt my nipples. Only Big E can say stuff like that. He said, look, you're not going to win the title from me. You can either get off the train tracks or get run right over. And McIntyre says, look, do you remember how excited you were? Remember how excited the fans were when you cashed in, when you won that WWE Championship? Well, I was WWE champion. I was champion for nearly over 300 days, but I never got that, which I did feel a little bit sorry for him as he referenced that. Look, he's been a two-time champion, and he's going to become another one at Crown Jewel. There's nothing Big E can do about it. When who should interrupt? But the Usos, what on earth are you doing here, first of all? You don't go to this show. What was the draft all about? It's bloody pointless. They come out. They are excited to see this potential fight with Big E and McIntyre. Jay's got his money on Big E. Jimmy's got his money on McIntyre. But they say it doesn't really matter because, let's be honest, look, we all know that Roman is going to beat Brock at Crown Jewel, retain the Universal Championship. We just want to know who's next for Reigns at Survivor Series. Is it going to be Big E? Is it going to be McIntyre? But again, that doesn't matter because he's probably going to take the WWE Championship in the end. He's going to add that to his trophy case. They go to leave. Big E stops them. Goes to speak for both of them, that being he and Drew. Drew says, you don't speak for me, pal. Bit of friction there already. But there's a challenge laid down for a match for the main event of the evening. And the Usos accept. But in the midst of all this, there's a bit of back and forth with Big E and Drew. That allows the Usos to sneak attack them and lay them both out with super kicks before they head off to get ready for the main event. Nice of them to book that.
Raw is an automatically bad show because of segments like this, even if the verbals here were really not that bad by WWE scripted standards. And I suspect it's because Drew McIntyre and Big E both have a little bit of latitude. Even if this was scripted word for word, broken clocks right twice a day, because I thought Drew's character motivations were fine. He did, in fact, like the contrast he put forward between Big E's celebration and his, genuinely like layered this with a little bit of like, it's decent babyface versus babyface storytelling. You could enjoy one and feel sympathy for the other. Big E's irreverent patter was quite amusing. I just was waiting for the interruption. I couldn't get hooked into their story or the dynamic or whatever because I was waiting for the interruption. Here's the interruption.
We called it yesterday on the preview, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just knew they were going to fuel this can-they-coexist rivalry, which going to become the Joker.
And they did actually have a main event booked for the evening, so
there's something that, had the Usos not conveniently arrived to interrupt the segment, then yes, they could have credibly put
the Drap versus Natalya.
Shut up. They could have credibly put the women's tag team match in the main event slot, but it wouldn't have been a good main event, would it? No. Will Bourne. You said it was going to be a match of the year candidate yesterday. I hope you feel ashamed.
I said on paper it had the potential to
be a match. The paper's got a WWE watermark on it.
Fair point, yeah. And also, I also like the fact that when we get to it, I'll obviously talk about the atrocious way that match was put together and booked and concluded. And that, you know, that awful finish. And I went, well, yeah, to be fair, that couldn't have been the main event because they couldn't send home fans with that. And then it happened again in the main event. Anyway, we'll talk about it later because we have a King of the Ring match to look forward to next. It is Xavier Woods versus Ricochet. Beforehand, Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston are confronted by Kevin Patrick at the curtain, asking about the potential for facing each other in the King of the Ring. Also neglecting to mention that one of their best mates has just been laid out in the ring, but never mind all that. We've got to talk about it.
They didn't really care.
Yeah, bollocks. Who cares? Anyway, these two work sensationally together. Of course they do. It's Xavier Woods and Ricochet. We start off quite early on with Ricochet hitting a picture-perfect looking superplex to take us into the ad break. When we come back, Ricochet's in control. Woods drops him over the top rope. sort of akin to that Nyla Rose knee that she hits Ricochet's draped over the top rope, and Woods comes off the top, does a double foot stomp on him, hits a diving leg drop, gets a two count, gets another two count off a gut buster, goes to the outside after Ricochet hits him with a Death Valley driver, and Ricochet just nails him with a couple of Darby Allin-esque dives, putting all of his body into it. But on the third time, Woods has recognized what's coming and gets out of the way, hoys him into the barricade, gets him back in the ring, diving elbow drop, 1, 2, 3, Xavier Woods advances, and we are one step away from the match we talked about. What potential they have. Xavier Woods versus Kofi Kingston. Friend versus friend with the King of the Ring on the line. We're one match away from it. What did you think of this match, though?
It was really well worked. Again, the backdrop of these WWE crowds, they just don't get into this genre. Part of the reason why I expect is because it's been so heavily diluted over the years since they kind of half-heartedly embraced quote-unquote indie-style wrestling. By WWE standards, this was electrifying, but unfortunately that means rubbing two sticks together to create fire. And by the time they'd really worked hard to rub those sticks together and got a little flicker of flame, it kind of ended without the crowd being taken on the thrill ride, because Ricochet is nothing in this company. The fans
on his birthday too.
Really?
Yeah.
Of course. But of course. Yeah, by the time like Ricochet does his cool stuff, the fans just begin to start caring. Like, the booking infects the matches. The end.
Right, we go backstage. Randy Orton's there. Matt Riddle comes in, and says, Randy, guess who challenged Omos to a match tonight? And Orton realizes that, you know, he had this really clever plan last week to bait Omos into a match so he could sneak attack AJ Styles. And Riddle's just done the same again. And he said, well, that's not going to work this time, is it? Because they know what's coming. Anyway, Riddle's trying to say he's following Orton's example from last week. He sees Orton as a mentor. There's some daddy snake bollocks and some talking about matching gear and whatever. Orton's having none of this, basically. Riddle says, oh, no plan, is it? I see where you're going. Well, I'll see you out there with no plan. And he concludes by saying, I'll see you out there, Randy. It must be a nightmare coming into work each week and being stuck with this idiotic, weird-voiced banter hound. Can you sympathise with Randy Orton somewhat, Sage?
For the first time ever, yes.
Anyway, should we move on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's time for Mustafa Ali and Mansoor to take on Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin in a very brief match. All breaks down. Mansoor's fighting on the outside with Shelton Benjamin. And out of nowhere, Cedric Alexander hits Ali with the Michinoku driver. Mansoor can't get in to break up the pin. Ali gets pinned. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Mansoor goes to help him up and Ali shoves him away. And well, we'll get to more on this later on, but it looks like the end of this tag team. As this happened, I thought, why on earth didn't we see this coming? In terms of, they need a match for Crown Jewel for Mansoor to be in, and they are nowhere near the tag titles. I feel so stupid sometimes. That is the most obvious bit of WWE booking where we're heading with this.
I mean, I guess, but I haven't booked it particularly well. Like, I'll never recall their win-loss record as long as the live long day. I vaguely recall that they won flukily on occasion. Latterly, they've just lost within 1 minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes or four at a max. And it's not as if there's any emotional heft to this. It's not as if Mansoor, too eager to please, has put on the face in peril sell job of a lifetime and just took it a little bit too far in a desperate bid to prove himself after like 4 minutes of exquisite, gorgeous, emotive selling. And then Ali's like, oh, if you'd have just tagged me in. I mean, they're just two geeks who lose, so there's no heft to any of this.
Right, let's move over to the Queen's Crown Tournament. It's Dana Brooke versus
Jesus
Shayna Baszler.
Christ.
This is another brief one. Got sort of a theme here with this Queen Crown Tournament from WWE. There was more of Corey Graves shooting on Dana Brooke, but her this time getting a slight bit of offense in and then making sure Corey noted what she was doing. But yes, it's Shayna Baszler dominating Dana Brooke, sending her into the corner. There was a nice spot where Dana Brooke went for something in the corner where she like leapt into it and just immediately got locked in the Kira Fuda clutch. That would have been a nice finish, but actually the finish was Baszler hitting a knee out of nowhere. 1, 2, 3. She goes to attack Dana Brooke afterwards, but the referee quickly breaks it up as we are in replay. Shayna Baszler advances. No great surprise here.
No. Like, I've seen worse Dana Brooke matches, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Certain like pinning combinations and reversals were somewhat fluid. Like, I don't think I'll ever bury Dana Brooke as long as I live. Like, I feel sorry for her. I think she's got an incredible work ethic applied to the wrong medium. And this really wasn't, she's embarrassed herself on occasion this year. This truly wasn't that at all. But what can you do in a minute and a bit? Like,
Charlotte Flair's cutting a promo backstage. She doesn't care about this tournament. Who cares about Shayna Baszler?
Well, who cares?
Yeah, who could possibly care
about this tournament? Like, why say that out loud?
She says she's tonight she's in a match with a bunch of women who can't walk the walk. She's the greatest ever, and she's going to win both title belts and meld them together, basically.
Cool.
So we get Riddle versus Omos. Riddle gets on the mic. He says... He's been thinking a lot lately. Something he does quite regularly, actually. He talks about Brogert. He stops Omos from coming to attack him. He says, look, you've clearly been on the bro team. He forgets what he was saying. He says, oh, yeah, and I suppose that happens to everyone at some point. And then out of nowhere, he shouts, okay, Randy, now! Nothing happens. Because, of course, he says, oh, sorry. I've just realised I didn't say the special code word. And he sings Orton's theme and he says, well, that's not one word. And I genuinely don't know what code word he said. I've written...
I tuned out of the first recap video, so I can't help you.
I've written Peta down, but I have no idea what he said. He said something, but I rewound it like 2 times and went, oh, I can't be bothered with this. Anyway, AJ Styles brilliantly turns the crowd because he says... What are you bloody talking about, basically? He's frustrated. He doesn't care what he's been saying before. he says, look, the people of San Francisco don't deserve this, even though they are dumb idiots. And they all go, oh, you git. And he tells the referee to start the match, which, of course, Big Jawed dominates. Yes, Riddle dives to the outside to get rid of AJ, attack him, but almost pulls him inside. Corner splash, choke slam. He's got him beat. And then... some reason, Styles gets on the mic and says, no, let's show these people what you've been learning. Let's show them some karate or something. Hit him with a roundhouse kick. So he kicks him in the head. They show a replay. They show a slow-mo replay. The crowd are like, get to the RKO, for Christ's sake. Almost hits the tree slam. Foot on the chest. 1, 2, 3. Styles goes, right, get out of the way. I'm going to kill him now. Gets him. As that happens, Orton's music hits and they do the old, oh, he's coming. And then Styles goes, oh, wait a second. Maybe he's going to come from behind, from the crowd. So he sends Omos to the outside. We never see where Randy actually comes from. But he slides in, RKO out of nowhere, and him and Riddle celebrate on the ramp. This was nothing.
Oh, fluff. This is phenomenally bad. Like, the only thing I've got left for this promotion, genuinely, is the odd pay-per-view match. That's good. Mostly total schadenfreude. And I mean, this was hilariously bad, and I still didn't find it that funny, which is probably the biggest indictment I can whack across this absolutely awful Monday Night Raw show. Like, Riddle is... they haven't been able to book a babyface since John Cena, like, at all. In brief flickers, whether it's, like, Kofi Punk, Brian, Becky, it never ends. Never really... ends up in anything meaningful. In Riddle, they book a guy, they come across something of a epiphany / masterstroke where it's like, well, if we make them geeks accidentally, or if we do it on purpose and have no pretensions of them being cool a la Seth Rollins in 2019. So they stumbled arse backwards into something with Riddle where he's just a total geek on purpose. And fans kind of identified, they're going, when like Randy was threatening to not reconcile with him and all the rest of it. In this segment, literally everyone in this arena thought he was a total geek.
Yeah.
They didn't go for his stupid shtick at all. Like, it was total, rat pissing on cotton stuff, this. And he looked like an idiot. He looked like an unfunny loser. He looked like a total geek. They really like the absolutely massive hoss stood opposite him, much more than him. The comedic timing wasn't that bad, but no one bit on it, so it couldn't have been that good.
Yeah, comedic timing means nothing if there's no comedy behind it.
Yeah, that's a great point. So you kill the guy's one sort of, like, I loathe to call it charm, but it was getting over to a degree. So they kill that dead. They kill him in this match. He gets the full Undertaker versus Kurt Angle at Fully Loaded 2000 treatment. Nope, not done with you yet. He's dead. Then they bring him back to life just to kill him again. He's completely dead. His in-ring aura is killed throughout the segment. So he's...
former UFC fighter.
Yeah. So he's bad physically in this segment. Eventually, Randy Orton comes out and he batters AJ Styles in this segment. It's literally 50-50 in terms of the tag teams, and the one member of each gets, like, physically battered. And then the babyface team, as if Riddle needs any help looking more moronic, celebrates as if this hasn't just been 50-50 before the match. Sometimes things happen on this show that are so stupid that I have to, and I hate them for this, I have to rewind it just to double-check I've not missed anything. It's like, well, this is as stupid as I thought. Obviously it is.
Yeah, you don't need to rewind it, trust me.
No, I should just, yeah.
So Big E and McIntyre, they're backstage after what happened at the opening of the show. Lovely, another recap, save a bit of time on a Tuesday morning. Love all that stuff. McIntyre confronts Big E, says it's his fault, basically. Look, and Big E says, we're going to beat each other, we're gonna brawl, we're going to go to war at Crown Jewel, but we need to be concerned about the Usos tonight. And McIntyre changes his mind. He agrees. He says, let's work together. You know, these guys, they've got to probably ask Reigns for permission to wipe their asses. So let's batter him. Let's batter him tonight. For one night only, they're going to let bygones be bygones. Big E talks about Drew's nipples briefly. And then they do the old, mega powers handshake, which is still a boy popper for me for some reason. I thought, oh, maybe this will be all right. It wasn't, but... I just love a good mega powers handshake because you've all done it with your mates on a night out, haven't you?
Me and Hamlet literally did a running bit at the 2019, I think, Christmas party where just like total marks, just besotted with professional wrestling, even during the social bit with the game and in the TV and the film lot. It's going, I did about 100 times, like a couple of tits.
Right, Lashley comes out and quite rightly actually points out that Goldberg, father, Hall of Famer, all that, blatantly confessed to wanting to murder someone in previous promos. He says, it's not really befitting behaviour, that of a WWE superstar, or all the other things that I've mentioned. He said, look, I'm a well-dressed champion. I defended my title all year, and Goldberg showed up in cut-off sleeves, making death threats and frothing at the mouth. He said, look, he's a dog that needs to be put down. He's going to end Goldberg's career. You can't stop the Almighty. You can't beat the Almighty. And it certainly can't kill the Almighty.
Not his best promo.
No.
If I'm being honest, like, and that's fine. He had a great mouthpiece who's, you know, he can't be on television for whatever reason. Look, strict analysis. Did this hype you up on the match that it functioned to build? No, because I'm... deathly afraid of the fact that Goldberg is going to make very ironic his promise to kill Lashley through his aging incompetence.
Sasha Banks cuts a promo. She says she doesn't want to hear about Bianca Belair. She is a blueprint of greatness, and she's going to beat Charlotte and then win the SmackDown Women's title at Crown Jewel. In amongst all this, by the way, if someone...
By the way.
I don't know where that came from. Do you know what it is? Is I was getting ready to potentially do some sort of accent for Chucky because we got some LTST here.
Yay!
For the fans. Remember Chucky in WCW? I really hope he shows up tonight to see Bran Marigo. But yeah, Chucky cut a promo about how often they didn't watch wrestling and they just went to commercials on Monday Night Raw. I don't know. Would you see this? What was going on here?
Well, no. And I heard about it after the fact because I was watching on... legitimately, I thought they just hadn't cut out the ads.
I thought that for a split second, but no, apparently not. There's another Chucky film or TV series or some bollocks. Who cares? Anyway, should we move on?
Always.
It's Jeff Hardy versus Austin Theory next. And in the midst of this, again, very brief match, like wrestling getting in the way of this TV show, I think Theory's got Hardy in some sort of chin lock, some sort of rest hold. When all the 24/7 geeks come in, Reginald flips over Theory. They all run through and then rush out, and Reginald, again, still doesn't get pinned. He must be, like, one of the longest reigning champs now, because he never gets pinned. He just sort of gets out of dodge, basically. Anyway, this all distracts Theory. That allows Hardy to hit him with a twist of fate. But as he comes off the top with a swanton bomb, Theory gets out of it. Schoolboys him, holds the tights. 1, 2, 3. Austin Theory again gets the upper hand on Jeff Hardy. At least I was panicking for a split second they were going to beat him on his second week on Raw, to be honest.
That's the most praise I've seen reserved for this match. I thought they were going to Karrion Kross him. Where's Karrion Kross, by the way?
Scott's coming back soon, apparently. That's what Andy told me on the news yesterday. So they are just keeping him warm.
Cool. I've got no thoughts. The match was too short.
See how many...
I mean, I'm by too short, I mean mercifully short. I mean, I don't have to talk about it.
Oh, yes. Reggie's second in the rankings now. 85 combined days as... Oh, he's only had one reign, to be fair. As 24/7 champion. Quite a way off R-Truth's 425 days as 24/7 champion. I genuinely didn't realise it had been going that long, but yeah. Oh, yeah, the Revival had it for a bit. Anyway, let's move on. What came next? Oh, a promo from Bianca Belair. She talks about beating Sasha Banks at WrestleMania. She won't forget what Becky Lynch did to her at SummerSlam, though. But Belair said she doesn't have to cheat to win. She's going to knock Becky Lynch down to Becky No Belts when they get to Crown Jewel. And she says, I go here now. Which apparently wasn't told to anyone making that graphic when they were like, look who we got in the draft, because she wasn't on it. Well done, WWE's graphics department again.
I've tuned out of what you said because the show's so boring. I'm sure it wasn't that important.
Yeah, fine. Because Kofi versus Jinder came next. Again, Kevin Patrick's at Gorilla. He's asking, you know, if Kingston wins this, you two are going to face off next week. And I thought, yes, that's the beauty of it. It's going to be great. We got really hyped up about it. Oh, my God. We're like, what, 9 minutes away from Kofi Kingston? Obviously beating Jinder Mahal. I mean, he's not going to have Shanky and Veer. They're Jinder's heavies because they can't be because they're on different shows now. So that's not going to be a problem. I mean, it's Jinder Mahal. Bish, bash, bosh. Kofi, see you in the semifinals. So let's see what happened on this match. Mahal takes him down, stomps him away in the corner, but Kofi hurricanranas him to the floor. He does that trust fall off the middle rope to drop him again as we go to a break. And I think, well, once we come back from this break, it's all Kofi, baby. And it's going to be Kofi winning, and then him and Xavier are going to do the old, put up your dukes, and we're going to face each other next week. Kofi hit the SOS, sort of landed on his own head, because Jinder doesn't know how to take any wrestling moves still, probably. He goes for the Trouble in Paradise, or sets up for it, and there's a big brawl on the outside. Shanky and Veer, they're there. Xavier Woods flies into to Shanky, but Veer lays out Xavier Woods. And this distracts Kofi Kingston, who I think goes for a top rope axe handle or something. It doesn't matter. Jinder Mahal catches him. He hits him with the Kalas. 1, 2, 3. Jinder Mahal advances. He will face Xavier Woods in the semi-final. This broke me.
I've been broken for years.
Devastated. Why? Why? You've already shown in the women's Queen of the Ring, whatever pissing calling it, that there is no problem with having a heel versus a heel or a face versus face. You don't have to have the heel baby face dynamic in this tournament. So why not give the fans just something, right, in Kofi versus Xavier? Because look at... You don't fantasy book WWE very often unless they absolutely beg you. And even you went, oh, yeah, you could have some fun with that. You could have all, you know, they start off, it's just a handshake and a back and forth, and then maybe one of them grabs the tights a little bit or gets caught with their hand on the ropes or whatever. No, it's going to be Jinder versus Xavier, and probably Jinder's going to piss and win because WWE hates good things.
Well, you don't understand, Wilborn. A heel in WWE isn't like a love-to-hate figure who entertains you and provides you a little bit of catharsis when they eventually get beat. A heel not, is not meant to play their part in something that gives you happiness. They are meant to deprive you of something that would theoretically make you happy. The worst thing about WWE, it would be so much better if they were just wildly incompetent. They've just got enough of a shred of awareness and competency that they recognize that which fans do want and just cruelly deprive you of it. But the idea is you're meant to hate gender, and it never works like that.
No.
No. In fact, because of this particular result, I'm now thinking that Jinder beats Xavier, with the idea being that Jinder, beating the guy who dreams of winning this meaningless tournament, just give it to him.
Yeah,
make a really loyal, great wrestler happy and his fan base happy and just make fans happy.
Because you're not going to do anything with the winner. You're going to give him a crown.
You're going to give him a crown. Like, Xavier Woods has been specifically positioned in this tournament because they, again, are just aware slash competent or, you know, not completely idiotic enough to realize, oh, people want Xavier to win this. Well, if Jinder beats him en route to winning it himself, that's heat. Like, that's what they do. I said before, because, I mean, I know he cares about it and I like him enough, but, like, just set your sights high on some absolutely rebooted thing that hasn't meant anything in years.
Right, Becky Lynch is
the match was not good, by the way. And it's not just that botch. Like, Jinder actively is bad.
Yes.
A very awkward professional wrestler. Very basic.
He's a basic bitch.
Considering how long he's been basic, he shouldn't be botching as much as he does.
No.
Or being as awkward as often as he is. Like, we talked about this on the Dynamite review. The most deflating botch possible. This absolutely incredible ripper of an 8-man tag. And because he was so invested, when the botch arrives, they just saw his powerbomb. Like, you can understand that botch because the ambition of the match is so much and it's so convoluted and it's so well-paced, so much action that, Christ, it's going to catch up with him. It's a deflating but understandable botch. Like, Jinder, it's like botching parboiling potatoes. You know what I mean? All you have to do is wait for the bubbles to go acca, and then, right, 6 minutes?
Mm.
How often do you parboil them for? I usually, a bit of a risky customer, like, I usually go about 7 or 8 instead of the regulation 5.
Yeah, I was going to say 6.
I go 7 or 8. Like, I go just on the edge of it turning into mash.
I say I and Louise because I'm just a mess in the kitchen.
Yeah. I usually go 7, 8 if I'm feeling a little bit brave because then you just get the fluff. And then you have to be super quick with your hands that have to be callous to try and whip them around the hot oil and boom, roast potato city.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Back to Monday Night Raw. Becky Lynch, it's her turn to cut a promo. She said she didn't have much to say, despite the fact that she talks a lot. She's already beaten all of them. She was 5 steps ahead of everyone. She compared Charlotte to piss, I think, and talked about Banks going home and crying a lot, basically.
Cool.
Should we get to the match?
Yeah.
Well, WWE didn't, so anyway. So we go out there. It's, like I said, it's Charlotte and Becky, Bianca and Sasha and a team. And we previewed this yesterday saying, can they get along? We all know it's WWE, so they won't. And we just basically anticipated a finish where maybe Charlotte walks out. Someone walks out on their partner and then you can pin one of them because, yeah, your numbers game, no one loses anything and wins and losses don't matter in WWE, so you don't really need to protect them. Well, that's not what happened. Initially, it was a bit entertaining, I will say that, in terms of the dynamic between Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, two sensationally talented women who've got a history, who both want to start off the match. Banks is yanking Belair back by her hair and going, I'll be starting this pissing match. And Bianca Belair's like, no, I'll start this match. I want to kick the crap out of whoever it is, Becky, who's in the ring or whatever it was. A huge brawl breaks out. All four women are brawling.
It's rubbish as well.
Yeah, in the ring, around ringside. Referees come out to try and separate things. Charlotte goes up top, goes for the moonsault, but that doesn't happen in the end. What actually happens is Belair hoys Banks onto the rest of them, and out come Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville to shout a lot on the microphone and say, I'm not having this. This match is happening. And when we come back from the break, it is happening. They're back. They are, to a certain extent, coexisting. But it plays out in the match as you suspect it would. You've got Charlotte in control, and then Becky blind tags herself in. You've got Sasha working the arm, and they do have a bit of a relationship, her and Bianca. They tag in, continue the arm work. Sasha tags back in, she works the arm. Sasha slaps Bianca on the shoulder because it's, tags, it's not just going to be the old classic friendly slapping of hands here. So later on, Becky shoves Sasha into Bianca, but Bianca sends her over the top rope. She hits a suplex to Becky, hits another suplex because, again, she's brilliant in between the ropes. She hits the rope, she hits a splash to Becky. But in the midst of all this, I think Sasha's got tagged. Regardless, she sends Bianca to the outside. She goes to the bank statement. Becky escapes. Becky tries to put her in the disarmer. Charlotte gets a tag. Becky hits a clothesline. Charlotte says, piss off out my ring to Becky. We've seen this story a million times. But in the midst of all this, Sasha's recovered. She gets a backstabber on Charlotte. Becky's still in there. She starts fighting with Sasha. She goes for a backstabber, but Bianca's there to pull Sasha off Becky. They all brawl. And then, for no apparent reason, the bell rings because the referee's lost control. And it's all really not about who wins the match. It's about who stands tall, Sige, because Becky goes for the disarmer on Bianca Belair, but Bianca Belair, again, showcases this insane strength of hers, picks her up. She wants the KOD, but Becky's holding onto the ropes. Backstabber from Sasha Banks. Becky kicks her. Sasha turns around. Elbow from Becky. Sasha's reversing an attempt at the manhandle slam. She goes for a backstabber. Becky holds onto the ropes again. Manhandle slam. In the midst of all this, Charlotte's just left. And Becky Lynch stands tall as if we could possibly care when this piece of crap has played out in front of our eyes.
This is worse than awful. Like, you're a very optimistic guy. And I like, for a bit, to, you know, piss on that. You said potential match of the year candidate. Under the right circumstances, with the right build, with emotional investment, with a lot of long-term patience, where all that matters, they could have a WWE, let's asterisk that one right now, they could have a WWE match of the year. I'd say, like, I can't really deny that if the situation and the circumstances were right. This was a wildly awful, yet another wildly awful thing involving Becky Lynch's WWE return, by the way. What an absolute rubbish waste of time it's been. Like, no finishes, nothing matters. They don't want to beat anyone, so don't put them in matches where they can get beat. Just book angles and promos instead. Like, be a wrestling company, not this drivel. The actual brawling component of all of this was absolutely rubbish. And this is worse than terrible because it's not just meaningless. We're going to give you a great match that looks great on paper. We're not going to give you it, really, because we don't really give you anything. We're total cornies to the goddamn bone. Like, I can't recall a similar dynamic with men. At least men get to wrestle before they do their rubbish coexistent thing. Like, this was laid out by a man.
Look at it in the main event. Like, yeah. It's an awful ending again, but at least we got a match for the most part.
This was so obviously laid out by a man under the idea that all women secretly despise each other. All women just want to talk a load of blather and crap and all hate each other. And, you know, they're so hysterical that they can't even perform their jobs. Really, they should just be in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, laid out by a man. The actual brawling component was rubbish.
I said this on the news. I genuinely don't know how they've got these three women who I said at the time, when you set it up at whenever it was, oh, yeah, SummerSlam. I was like, Bianca Belair, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch. I didn't think about the pissing draft because no one does. I was like, these three women, or combinations of these three women, or just, you know, maybe even Hot Potato in the belt, they should get you to the Royal Rumble. They've run out of steam and they haven't even got to pissing Crown Jewel yet. And I doubt that match is hardly going to be a classic, is it?
Oh, yeah. It's going to reek.
Right. I need a palate cleanser. Doudrop versus Natalya. Skip! Absolutely skip this. Skip, skip, skip. Especially not just because it's Natalya. And actually, I will say this before we do the skip. I know skip means skip. I know. What was the finish to this match? What was the maneuver that Natalya was trying to do when she got rolled up and put in a small package? What was the maneuver?
I don't remember.
It was a sharpshooter. It was a sharpshooter. I punched the air for this, but we're skipping it because it was crap. It was barely given any time yesterday.
Do it. I've done the thing.
And Doudrop said the words, "Yas, Queen. Piss off." Right. I will do this, okay? Sorry. I apologize. I got carried away.
It's like three. I'll skip the main event now. It's a waste of time.
Enough all that. It's now time for this. It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The 5-star review. Nailed it. And this week's 5-star review is brought to you by Brett Waters. If you want your name associated, you want to suggest a 5-star review, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling. Leave us a 5-star review.
This looks dangerously like a poem.
It's not a poem, thankfully.
It looks like stanzas and I got scared.
But yeah, if you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. Brett Waters simply writes this. Let me set the scene. It's 2012. The product...
Story time with Ben Waters, baby.
The product could not be hotter. New talent shooting straight to the moon. Raw is about to change the world and move to 3 hours. Watch the Raw 1000 commercial behind the scenes. Siege, what was going on in 2012? Take us back there.
2012, I really liked it. Again, curves. Again, format reeked. Again, there was a sense of... Everything good about it was a sense of resistance, but this is a time when people actually cared.
Punk was WWE champion.
Punk was WWE champion. Daniel Bryan, through sheer force of will and the fact that we all adored him, was really getting over. He was really getting profile. We still had bollocks between those two men with Kane, because he's always in there, like a win it. Like, he's a win it of a wrestling performer, is Kane. All that said.
What's a win it for people who may not be aware?
It's a little bit of dried shit that sticks to your arse.
Right, I'm going to write down another bleep. There we go.
But again, there's no AEW. Realistically, at this point, the New Japan Western expansion hasn't happened. It's infiltrating the consciousness of the Western wrestling fan through Tanahashi's legend and the rise of Okada. But WWE, legitimately, I thought 2012 was one of their best years in its modern history. Like, you had Brock Lesnar coming back and really, really messing people up. Then it got boring with Triple H. But the John Cena stuff, he really messed them up. It was wild, hard way blood. Like, can he realistically be hitting people that hard? It was awesome. CM Punk and Daniel Bryan were further diversifying the very, very one-dimensional WWE match style with their technical artistry at Over the Limit 2012. The Shield were months removed from debuting. Like, John Cena and The Rock made it feel like really big time again after the exits of, like, the full-time exits of Batista, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker really start to make things get to a point where R-Truth had to headline a pay-per-view, like that sort of deal.
Like Capital Punishment, if I remember.
Yeah. Genuinely, it felt like corners were being turned. Genuinely, the outcry for a Punk or for a Bryan, it genuinely felt, it's so naive in retrospect, but it genuinely felt, as far as the men go, they were still treating women like sex objects.
Divas, yeah.
And the tag team divisions never happened since like the early 90s and then Attitude Era. It genuinely felt like, at least insofar as the men went, that change was so loudly and fiercely willed into existence in 2012 that this was it. This was the turning point. That's what it felt like. It felt like the turning point.
And Raw 1000, of course, infamous. Ruled. Great, great episode. CM Punk turns heel, Rock, Big Show, all that sort of thing. Anyway, Sige, you and I think, it's fair to say, aficionados of comedy. We like things like Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm and stuff. So we're going to like some of this comedy because it's the telephone game, basically.
Is it the main event after this?
Pretty much.
Good.
Pretty much. So the Raw 1000 commercial, if you've forgotten, you got Vince on the phone. John Cena's walking past and he says, John, make sure you let the talent know, you know, it's Raw 1000. We're doing a special, you know, 3 hours. Make sure everyone knows the show starts at 8. But you want to get what? Never guess what, Sige.
What?
John Cena's got his headphones in. So he hears something. He hears,
starts at 8.
Right? But takes his headphone out to be like, what, boss? But Vince, he's already moved on. Anyway, I'm back on the call, pal. So, it's a telephone game. It's just, you know, you misheard it. So, as people say, I've got to bring a date. And Big Show's there. He's like, I've got to lose weight. And Kane's there going, what do you mean you got to bake a cake? It's really...
Well, looking at 2017, he baked a whole hell of a lot of cakes.
It's really funny, this. Okay. Thankfully, the Outside the Ring series has gone. I think this is something we really need to delve into the backstory of. This 30-second... telephone game commercial where the big joke is Great Khali's here to check Vince's bloody prostate, okay? What's your favourite Outside the Ring episode other than this one, of course? Because I think, we'll say at the same time, 3, 2, 1, The Miz getting his hair washed. Yeah, that's me, mine too.
I can't remember any of this.
No, it's just, I just watched the opening video package, I'll be honest. Punk doesn't want to go to Kuwait.
Bit racist. You know why? Because it's just full of goats.
There's a funny bit with him asking the goats where the arena is. Why is he asking Daniel Bryan where the arena is? I've written this.
Hey, it's ahead of the table. The tribal chief Roman Reigns. That's good.
I've written this is the most basic wank ever. Okay, so what I mean by that is the behind the scenes that we're seeing is people going. So I've got to face this way when I'm on the phone delivering my god-awful line. And then we hear from Andrews Jenkins. Not Andrew Jenkins. Andrews Jenkins. He's the director. And he explains, thankfully, for the idiots. There's a big misunderstanding. Rob Schneider is telling everyone that Raw starts at 8.
Rob Schneider is a telephone.
And we get to see some of the lines that, unfortunately, you know, either didn't make the cut or were simply too funny. Simply too funny. R-Truth. I have a match with the Secretary of State. Big Show.
Why are we having a debate?
Kofi. No, I think he said you're my new roommate. Hang on. It's the sound of a bottom of a barrel being scraped there, Sige. But my favourite bit of all this, and I'd actually...
I've got two, but come back to me.
Okay.
After this.
Well, I think you're going to jump on this as well, because I generally don't advise our listeners to go back and watch these clips because they're dreadful. But the moment where the director is leaning past the camera... And you'll never guess, but it's AJ Lee in skimpy gear, and he's gone, you know what I should say? We all have to wear roller skates.
Say roller skates. I want to end this man's life when I saw this. Pervert, I know exactly what you're thinking. I know what your depraved thoughts are, and you're trying to realize your depraved thoughts with the most worst partner of all time.
This is a 5-minute video, right? Kane's collated some papers, R-Truth talking about Watergate, which was like quite a good line, I suppose.
Yeah.
But Doug Chamberlain, the cinematographer, he cuts to him and he goes, 8 roller skates. He just lists words that rhyme and it's just like, we got it, Doug. Thanks for that, brother. There's Kofi and Sheamus, it cuts to them when the cameras aren't rolling. And they look like they want to be literally anywhere else. They just are like, yeah, we're doing this thing where it's about some rhymes. And they're like, oh, this thing's going to be great. Things are rhyme with 8.
The best thing is like they know for a fact they are advertising the fact that their show is going to be ruined by going 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, Christ, I'm going to have to work 5 extra minutes in every match. Everyone's going to get really bored.
I love this as well because some poor bastard has gone to the effort of... Because the scene is they're in the like break room and they're having a cup of tea and Sheamus is on the phone and they hear, well, we've got to bake a cake or whatever it was. Someone's made Kofi coffee and Sheamus's ginger tea. First of all, that offends me.
Shut up.
Second of all, what? Why? No one's going to go, 5 Easter eggs from the WWE advert that you didn't notice. Just, it's the most... basic bollocks.
My favorite bit, and I don't know if you'll get to it, so I'm just going to say it now, is that it cuts, like, it's interspersed with them, like, sort of talking about the process, and it cuts to AJ Lee, and she goes, yeah, yeah, we might not be advertising a 3-hour Raw. I think it's getting lost in translation a bit. It's just a really nice word of euphemism for rubbish, and it doesn't even make any sense.
And the director's there at one point explaining what they're doing. And explaining the scene that the great Carly's in, where he walks in with Triple H to treat Vince's prostate, and he pulls a face, and they do the snap of the glove. He explains the director, and Triple H goes, you do know he spoke to don't speak English, don't you? Fantastic. AJ is also having flashbacks to when she was a secretary back in an office. Same with Kofi, he's flashing back to his office days. R-Truth's there, he's working out with little Jimmy. Okay. Then they cut to the bit with the goats and they're wandering around CM Punk and they're not playing ball. And the director goes, still the best ones to work with. Die. Right.
What time is this? I'll wrap this up, Wilbur.
Okay. Greg Holly, he can't work the glove. He can't work the glove.
It's not even my glove.
He keeps breaking when he can't put it on. And then they save the best line till last.
I mean, it's just, again, even in these ridiculous fluff things, I'm sorry, Will Bourne, I knew you rhyme for your big finale.
No, this is the point, is their big line is, who's Nate? End. Like, I thought you meant to end on the big, huge bap. I was just like that. And that's the end of the minute video.
Like, even in these little daft adverts that they are probably aware, even they're aware, oh, that's a bit rubbish, but yeah, it's fine. We need to do an advert. Like... even get an indication of this company's systemic incompetence. That, again, was always there in 2012. It just didn't feel so apparent. Gimmick the glove for the great Carly.
Anyone got any powder? Anyone got any powder?
Gimmick the glove. Like, get a bigger glove. He's got shovels for hands. Incompetence.
Well, anyway, should we go to the comment section?
Please do, because that gets us closer to my dinner.
This does not reflect the views of myself, the Dally Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Yo, it's Lucy Q writes, why are WWE superstars and divas so funny?
Well, it's because you've got to get a collection of ex-Hollywood writers.
Christopher Smith, this is alluding to something we're going to come back to later on in these comments. Michael Sidgwick. Oh, I can't imagine having AJ as a secretary. That would be bad for my marriage, lol.
I'm trying to get a touch my cack.
Gee, I love this. You know what I love? We comment sometimes.
You know what I love? People think they've got a chance with AJ Lee.
Yeah, yeah. I love is when people go, you know what I should have said? Like, think they like someone's going to go, holy crap, there's this comedian in the comments. Cheese writes, Vicky Guerrero's on a date? Santino's going to be late. John Cena isn't great.
Star. So I was like tracking down Cheese. That was a big moment on the Tonight Show.
Max Power. Right, lol, funniest commercial ever. P.S. Because there's a bit with AJ Lee going, the bastards say we gotta hydrate. P.S. Why is the water in a cone?
Why is the what?
Water in a cone.
Right, Wilbur, when you got Jazz there, you got Susie Jazz, and the guy commented about hydrating AJ Lee.
Oh,
I really thought you were going to talk about how you wanted to come on her face.
Oh, then we'll get to something like that in a minute.
Oh, of course we will. It's YouTube.
Farhad writes, wow, AJ's six-pack. Guys, where's the Miz? I don't see him. And then he writes in a reply, anyone answer me?
Christ, I thought Hamlet liked the Miz more than that.
Right. Right, here we go. Prod monster.
Prod.
Right. Just imagine writing this. AJ must have some good looking parents.
I'll take all three because I'm hardcore.
Franziel writes, wait a minute. AJ Lee wears bra. Boo, women who wear bra.
You have to look to find that out.
Boo. Boo. An ugly mofo guy, 77, writes, AJ Lee, the cure to being flaccid. Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I've got the cure to being flaccid right here. It's AJ Lee. You greedy bears. That's probably the director writing that when he says roller skates. Same holder skates. Thanks to Brett Watts for that.
You had a big flaccid.
Oh, dear. More of those sorts of things, please.
Thanks. Couldn't coexist in the main event. Follow me at him situation.
Okay. We return to Monday Night Raw, where John Morrison is peacefully meditating backstage. Oh, God. Rhea Ripley and Nikki A.S.H. walk up to him. He says he's trying to expand his mind because there's a lot in there. And Nikki says, I'm glad you're following your dreams, John. And then Rhea says, hey, bloody hell, Nikki, you know what he's bloody talking about? And Nikki says, I've got no idea. And Austin Theory takes a selfie with Big E. So that's something else that happened at this point. Anything you want to say?
Why is Big E taking a selfie with a guy who maybe doesn't watch the show because it's rubbish? otherwise, he'd know better.
Right. Long-term story from the whole show getting paid off here. Kevin Patrick, he's chatting with Mansoor about what happened with Ali earlier. Ali just happened to be walking past. He calls Mansoor a giant waste of time. He says, look, you only want to dance. You only want to make friends. I had your back. But I should have told you the truth from day one. You are a loser. You are nothing. Walks off. Mansoor goes, well, I guess I'll have to talk to him later. And Ali goes, you clearly haven't got the point here. Beats him up, batters him down. Of course. Mustafa Ali, sensationally talented wrestler, crown jewel, week and a half away. We need someone in the mould of a Cesaro and a Dolph Ziggler to bump around for Mansoor so we can get a nice victory in Saudi Arabia. Here it is. Another tag team splits on Raw.
Remember T-Boss tweet? Oh, God.
But it is the most obvious thing that we just haven't spotted before.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Who cares? All I can think about is how woefully miscast they are, because Mansoor is playing an idiotic, oblivious geek, when in fact, he's actually quite funny at times. I know he's got some bad stuff in his locker, but other things he said,
yeah,
he comes across well. Ali, on the other hand, is like an incredible working baby face, and he's a heel. Like, oh God, just shut it down. Shut the whole operation down.
Main event time. SmackDown champions, tag team champions, the Usos versus WWE champion Big E and Drew McIntyre. And Drew and E do coexist pretty well for a while. They even hit a non-New Jay version of the Unicorn Stampede. But the Usos recover, drive Big E into the steps. We go to a break. We come back. Jay misses the hip attack. Big E suplexes him, brings in McIntyre. McIntyre goes wild. Jimmy gets an overhead suplex, a spine buster. Jay tags in and hits double super kicks. That gets a two count as well. McIntyre gives them both neck breakers. He goes to the corner, starts the 3-2-1 for the Claymore countdown. But Big E, mirroring what happened last week, tags himself in, tells McIntyre to get out of the ring, but turns around into consecutive super kicks from Jey Uso. Jey, I think, comes off the top regardless. Big E counters something, but in the midst of doing this, knocks McIntyre off the apron. He gives Jey an STO, but McIntyre, just furious with Big E knocking him off the apron. He pulls Big E out of the ring when he clearly has got the match won. They brawl. Somehow, Drew, in the midst of all this, has got his head busted open. They brawl. The referee calls for the stoppage. Again, another non-finish in this goddamn night. The Usos recover. They take out both men with dives. They are doing stuff around the tables, but Big E fight and Drew fight them off. And as eventually they recover to just being the two of them in the ring, Big E turns around into a claymore to close the show.
Did this need to go 15 minutes? Do I need to read on Twitter every 2 months when it resurfaces the whole Usos are better than the Young Bucks? Have you ever seen a Young Bucks match as boring as this? Ever? You have 15 minutes to work with, impress me, if you're that good. I thought this was really quite boring, really quite slow. Like, just total content obligation stretched out. And the storyline was so patronising and so repetitive and so obvious. And it's so bad, in fact, that it kind of makes Big E look like a knob. Why did you tag yourself in? I guess it's revenge. Whatever. Creatively bankrupt. I hate this promotion.
The two big matches from this show didn't have a finish.
No. What does?
Occasionally pay-per-view matches.
Absolute waste of friggin' time. An absolute waste of friggin' time.
Yeah, understandably buried across social media, this show. The highlight of last night was seeing The Miz dress as a genie on Dancing with the Stars, if I'm perfectly honest. Awful Raw.
Aye.
Well, we'll be back to review it next week anyway. Maybe it'll improve. Better bloody improve after this week. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We'll be previewing NXT 2.0 later on today and looking ahead, further ahead, to Survivor Series. Don't forget, we are teaming up again with our pals at Top Rope Brewing.
Are we doing another podcast today?
This is the Survivor Series thing with Top Rope Brewing. Don't you worry.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there you go. This fear in his eyes. No, the guys at Top Rope Brewing are celebrating. So
I heard the thought beer and I thought, well, that's going to help me get through it because their beers are really, really nice.
They are indeed.
But is it worth talking about WWE? I would say yes. They are really, really good. Their sours in particular are excellent.
They're great. They've sent us some to the office and, well, they've all pretty much been claimed, to be perfectly honest, as well. So ahead of Survivor Series, looking ahead to it, not only that, but celebrating 5 years of Top Rope Brewing. We've teamed up with them. Unfortunately, again, this is only for our UK listeners. We are looking to do something with them in the US going forward, though. If you want to get your hands on this brilliant Survivor Beeries box, 12 craft beers, 45 quid and free delivery, all you need to do is go onto Top Rope Brewing's site and put in the code Here's Why at checkout to get free delivery. They are delicious, they're fantastic, and if you order them, they will arrive more than ready in time for Survivor Series. So go and check out Top Rope Brewing for that code. Here's why, if you need it. But anyway, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.